All right, what I wanted to do was to take you through what's been going on in processing vegetables as far as mechanization, automation, looking at the past, where we're at now, and some ideas of where we're going in the future. The picture you see there is a picture of five lima bean harvesters, or pea combines, in our largest vegetable processing vegetable producer in Delaware. You wouldn't think it, but Delaware is a major producer of processing vegetables, with lima beans being our major crop. This is Delmarva Peninsula. Is very flat. In fact, when I moved that down to Delmarva from Pennsylvania, I asked them where the hills were. They said, well, there's a hill over there. But anyway, this is a coastal plain, very conducive to growing vegetables. We have adequate water resources, so a lot of irrigation. Largest vegetable grower for processing vegetables, West Farms. And so just give you a sense of why I'm involved in processing vegetables. And our nearby states also grow a fair amount of vegetables for the East Coast. Some of our products from this region. So again, lima beans, in any given year we probably grow more lima beans than acreage wise than anywhere else in the world in the small state of Delaware. We do some of the other crops that we work with are peas, sweet corn of course. We have a pickling cucumber industry, not as big as anything like in Michigan or North Carolina, but that's still 5,000 or 6,000 acres. And this is all machine harvested pickles. Some snap bean acreage, actually Pennsylvania is probably the biggest snap bean grower in the region with close to 10,000 acres. We do have some processing potatoes. Black Gold is in our area growing for Frito-Lay. We pretty much have very little tomatoes left in the region, but believe it or not, it's growing back. We're starting to see some movement back to the East Coast. It's about 1,500 acres in the region. You can see historically we had a lot of acres back when the hand harvest days. Every little town on the peninsula had a tomato cannery at one time, and you can see there was 22,000 acres in 1920. We do some processing peppers for pickling. There is some spinach production for processing also in our area. And there's some odd other crops that are grown, squash at times, winter squash. So over the years, our university has worked a lot with pickle harvester improvement. We had an agriculture engineer that spent about 10 years doing some work on this area. I want to use this as kind of an example of how things have gone, what the history has been, and what things have happened to the harvester end. Again, processing vegetables, it's been the ability to mechanize harvest that has really reduced food cost, increased the productivity, and allowed us to grow a lot of vegetables on more extensive acres. A pickle harvester is a pretty simple device in that you have something that undercuts the vine. This is again for once over harvest, so you're pulling up the plant. You're feeding that into the machine. The machine either has one of two separation units. It either has a pinch roller that pinches off the pickles, or it has a bouncer that bounces off the pickles. And then, of course, the debris is blown out of the machine. This is what's being operated in our area. There are three or four of these self-propelled machines that do six rows at a time. We still do have a few farmers that have their own machines, though. This is where kind of thing where it started. This is some of the experimental work back in the 50s for Michigan State, where of course they grow the most pickles in the country, I think. And this was a machine that went on either side of the plant and again pinched off the cucumbers off to the side. Eventually Michigan State came up with this design, which is that pinch roller. You have a blade that undercuts, a feed mechanism, a pinch roller, and then a conveyor that takes the pickles. This design is still being used to some extent. We still have a few machines that maybe not this old, but of this Wilde manufacturing company, we still have some Wildes that are being used in our area. This is an example. They added a collection bin in the back and feed mechanisms, but it essentially is the same machine. Our engineer worked a lot on these, improving the feed mechanisms, the pinch mechanisms, to improve recovery and reduce damage. A lot of the innovations that they did on these machines have gone into that Vogel machine that you see. That's the self-propelled machines. Some of the other, this was an FMC machine that eventually turned into this. Again, FMC is no longer this iteration is no longer in the pickle harvester business. FMC was bought by another company. There's another iteration of FMC overseas in Britain that's called PMC, I believe. One of the issues that has been with harvesters is that we used to have dozens of companies that made different harvesters for vegetables, for processing, and for fresh market, for that matter. But it's down to just a handful, with Oxbow being the big boy on the block. But a couple other companies are still in business, and for potatoes, it'd be Lockwood, or for Pickrite that's still making harvesters. There are some smaller companies in business, but we are losing them little by little. So when you get down to where you only have a few companies doing harvester improvement, that means whatever they're interested in is what's going to go on. So again, this is just go over some of the harvesters, what has happened over the years. Pretty simple machines, the pea and succulent bean harvesters, which we use for peas and lima beans in our region. Pretty simple mechanisms. You have a finger unit that flips the pods off, conveys them into the unit, and in this unit here's just a bunch of beaters. It just beats the peas and beans out of the pods. They're collected on a conveyor. Of course, you're blowing out the trash, or the trash goes out the back and it goes into a bin and conveyor. Over the years, there have been improvements into the header design so that we get better stripping of the pods. There have been certainly things that we've done so that we can control the speed of the beaters, we can control the speed of the head. But still, the limitations on how these machines work isn't necessarily the machine itself, it's a plant. We need a plant where the pods are set up off the ground. One of the things that will make you have very bad harvest recovery is if you have uneven field. How do you get uneven fields? Bad cultivation practices. The other thing is if you have varieties that set too low, you're just going to miss those pods. So one of the things that we have going on in Delaware is we have a lima bean breeding program, and Emily Ernst, who is our breeder, she's trying to develop varieties that are going to set up higher so we can improve harvest recovery. But a lot of our mechanization work, it required work by breeders ahead of time or in concert with the development of the harvesters to make the systems work. Tomatoes would be a prime example there. Without the breeding of machine harvestable tomatoes, you wouldn't have had that change in that industry. Again, I've shown those machines how they work. We had a lot of work over the years on how to improve harvest recovery here. But again, it went back to the largest part of it is how the people grew the crop and how good the variety was as far as setting pods off the ground. Sweet corn harvesters, again, another pretty simple design. Essentially, for most of our processing sweet corn, we use a snapper. Just snaps the ear off and then conveys it back. For fresh market, you have a more gentle where cuts the ear off of the plant and conveys it in a more general manner. But pretty simple machines that haven't changed much over the years. Some of the things that can be done, though, and one of the things that we'll talk a little bit about later is trying to get some geo-referenced, do some yield mapping. We haven't really adopted yield mapping on a lot of our are processing vegetables, not because it's not possible, just because the companies really haven't put it on the machines. So there are certainly ways to put load cells on these conveyors and geo-reference that information so that you can get yield maps. And I'll show you, there are some companies now that are providing this equipment that people can add on to their harvesters. Snap pea harvesters, again, pretty simple designs where you have a header that strips off the pods, conveys it back, you have blowers to get rid of the trash. There are things that are being done here to improve the removal of the waste material without shooting the beans out, which again, that can be automated as far as changing the speeds of how these fans work as the loads differ and changing those according to the size of the crop. Sweet potato harvesters haven't changed a whole lot over the years. You basically can have an undercutter. You have a chain that gets rid of the dirt and also loosens the potatoes off of the vines. And then they're go to a conveyor. You do have things that can help pick out rocks, and there are some other things. You can add a crew onto these bigger machines. They're self-propelled machines also. For sweet potatoes, Ramon, maybe you can talk more about this at some time. There's a lot more processing sweet potatoes, a lot more interest in that, and they're machine harvested. At the same type of device, trying to not bruise the sweet potatoes. Greens harvesters design haven't changed a lot over the years either. You essentially have a cutter bar and then a feed mechanism to a conveyor. Then that's what goes into for processing now. For fresh market, there have been some more innovations where you can do bin lots, which is necessary for the leafy greens industry. But for processing, it's this port-away type machine is still being used quite a bit. The one innovation that was done to these machines is to add instead of having a cutter bar here, adding a bandsaw does a much cleaner cut. So the newer machines all have bandsaws as the cutting mechanism. Tomato and pepper harvesters, again, this design over the years has not changed a lot, and you have, you're cutting the plant, then you have a mechanism that again separates the tomatoes, gets rid of the trash, and then you have on some of the machines, and in fact the majority of machines, there will be a color sorter that will separate the green from the reds, and then you still have to have a crew on these machines to do final sorting to get the grade that you would like. Yeah. Well, again, you're breeding a crop so that you require the crop to be bred so it isn't damaged. So all of you that work with processed tomatoes, what's the characteristic? They have that thick skin. They're very very solid and not prone to damage. In fact, that was part of the whole developing the processing, mechanized processing tomato industry, is development of those varieties to go along with it. With pepper harvesters, this is something that we have seen in our area. You can use a tomato harvester or a modified tomato harvester to harvest peppers. Again, for processing, a little bit of damage is not really important here. They're going to be chopped up or going to be cored and ringed or chopped, so it's available to do bell peppers. We do banana peppers as well as jalapenos with these machines. One of the things that we had about 3 years ago, we had a machine that came in that would a stripper type machine. These are used for chili peppers, but they were modified to use on green. In this case, on jalapenos in our area. And the idea here is the plant goes through the strippers, strips off the fruit's collected, but the plant stays there. So in theory, you can get two crops a year off the same plant. So you would then, of course, it removes a fair amount of leaves with it, but you would, again, fertilize and have the plant recover. And in our area, we were able to get two crops, but in warmer areas we'd be able to, it certainly is possible. So this is something that some of you may see, is the stripper machine. This is a simple one for stripping off peppers, one row type. Not a lot. Again, that's going on with carrot and beet and our root crop harvesters. You basically have two designs: one where you undercut, and then you're pulling up the carrot by the tops. The other is where you're mowing off the tops and then you're just digging them. It's more or less like a potato digger, and you're shaking off the dirt. And this, a lot of our processing carrots are done with this type of machine. This is used mostly more for fresh market, although you certainly could use it for processing. All right, well, what are some of the things that we're getting into for processing crops? Well, of course, GPS mapping is nothing new. We've been using it in field crops forever. But this idea of using some of the information in processing vegetables, we have a project currently with root knot nematode in our area. I have two graduate students working. And one of the things we're looking at is the association between our electrical conductivity readings and nematodes, with the idea that you could map out a field. And then, because processing vegetables, you know, economies are not the same as with fresh market, you could selectively treat the field with a nematicide. So you plot this out and then apply nematicides to those areas that are a higher risk. So we're working on that project right now, as far as georeferencing areas, doing the nematode counts beginning and at the end of the season, with the idea that we could create these risk maps that people could use. But this has been the real changer for field crops, but it's going to be a real changer, and already is a real changer for our vegetable processing vegetables, is RTK. This is the ability with a GPS down to inches so that you can, in combination with auto steer, you can do all kinds of things. And you know, just the example, this is from one of our regional tractor companies. Just the idea of not planting into a headland, that's worth a lot of money, and yield actually, or something like that. But with this coupled, you can do line up your planting. One of our pickle company, with RTK planted fields where they could have the maps, the exact planting layout, they would then put a receiver on their pickle harvester that would be driven automatically off of that planting, RTK planted map. And the idea is there's, if any of you has been in a pickle field when they're full vine, you can't hardly see the rows. So this, they could actually not have to worry about that, having a really skilled operator. They would just plug it in, turn on the automatic guidance, and then they would get down each row and not run over pickles. And that was worth maybe 10% increase in productivity as far as recovery in those fields. All kinds of things. You can couple the this with our variable rate technologies. I already talked about nematicides. We've been doing variable rate liming in vegetable fields. So the two coupled together, where you have very precise guidance as well as the maps of where you want to apply. Again, this is being applied in our processing vegetables. With land preparation, the RTK again eliminates overlap, so you're more productive. It allows you to do contours much easier. And certainly for planting, it allows you to not have, you have exact planting strips, no too close, too far. And then these maps can be used for other things. The georeferenced planting maps can then be used for cultivation. They can be used for different applications. Certainly, we have a lot of adoption by our service companies of using the guidance so that they don't get overlaps on their chemical applications. Nozzles being shut off, again, as you go to headlands, where each nozzle is shut off accordingly. So we have much less overlap of herbicides, of other chemicals, which, again, is a good thing as far as not having herbicide carryover, not having extra insecticide or fungicide go out. One that's very interesting is the whole idea of cultivation. We had a number of growers, processing growers, that have had tried the sensor-based, where it would sense the row and then guide the cultivator accordingly. Not with auto-steer. You still have to have an operator on the tractor for this, but the cultivator would move according to where the row was. What is really interesting is this idea that you can use RTK to set up your map so that you can then precision cultivate. Just set up your auto steer and it would, and have your cultivator being adjusted according to that a map that was generated from the planting. That is a little scary and a little bit in its infancy right now, but I do see that as a way that things are going to go. As people get these precise planting maps, then you can create precise cultivation maps that will guide a cultivating tractor. Any of you ever cultivated in here? It's one of the most boring jobs, and there's a lot of operator problems as far as taking out rows, and so this eliminates all that. Another thing that's been widely adopted in the processing vegetable industry has been mechanized sorting. I talked about color sorting. There's color sorters on harvesters. There's color sorters in the processing plants. What has happened is this has become more, much more high speed over the years. So if you go into a processing vegetable plant, these color sorters will be on there, and the speed at which they can sort through sweet corn or lima beans or peas, it's just amazing. How they work, they can be mechanical kickoffs, as in that tomato sorter, or it could be a blast of air. They can set these up to recognize things that don't look proper. This is a baby spinach sorter, where they're getting rid of those things that just don't look right. These can be integrated onto the harvesting machines. And that's where I see a lot of this going, where we're getting a cleaner product before it even gets into the plant. One of the issues with a lot of our processors is that they spend an awful lot of time cleaning up product. In fact, they still have hand sorters in almost all the, in a lot of the processors, processing products, and that's a lot of money, a lot of time. And a lot of effort to have those hand crews do the final sorting. I see this as a way that we're going to eliminate a lot of that and make it more efficient and more cost effective in our processing. Yield monitoring is here. This is University of California example. I just pulled off the web where they were doing some work with yield monitoring on a processing tomato. And as I said before, the companies that make the harvesters, they're not really putting these yield monitors on currently, at least most of the folks. But the market, where there's a need, the market fills the need. And there are companies, this is a Canadian company, that will sell you the equipment so you can put it on your processor harvester. And it's a really load cell based system. GPS reference so that you can develop yield maps for processing vegetables. Anything that has a conveyor, you can potentially put these load cells on, and they're selling this whole system so that you can get things like this. That's a potato yield map. So I see, again, this is something that I think a lot of our processing vegetable growers and or companies will go toward. again, there has to be a reason to do this. A company is interested in product. The growers are interested in growing most efficiently, most economically. So there has to be the two coordinating. Then finally, end up with a couple other projects that the University of Delaware is involved in. We have our irrigation engineer, which I really wish he was here giving this talk, but he's got other things to do. We had him here last year with variable rate irrigation. This is not a pipe dream. You can buy it now off the shelf, but the question is why? And how much is it going to gain you? And is it going to be economical? I think for processing vegetables, it has some potential. Remember, when you have these controllers on and you have a lot of electronics, lightning plays havoc with these too. So it's pain in the neck managing a normal pivot. Add all these controllers on every sprinkler, and you can imagine what could go wrong. The other thing that's going on is subsurface drip irrigation. This is something we're looking at for processing vegetables potentially. The issue I see here is we have to harvest off times when it's wet when we have to harvest when the crop's wet. Once you rut up a field with subsurface irrigation, what are you going to do? Then I've worked a little bit with this idea of harvesting pickles off plastic. We've developed the cultural methods to do this, and they are, you can certainly plant into plastic. We have tools that you can modify a harvester to cut to pick off plastic, and I've shown that you could grow three crops a year in our region off the same plastic. So this is something I'm trying to get our pickle industry interested in, but nobody will buy me one of those.